Hi, I'm Dan Leonard, still in the East.
And I'm George Whitam, always in the West.
And together we're still East-West Audio Body Shop. Well, we continue with the last three EWABS episodes, and we're going to be doing another roundtable roundup. This time, we're going to talk about audiobooks. We've got some great guests. Ann Richardson, who's a very accomplished narrator, Karen Cummins, and Carlin Craig, who owns Post Hypnotic Press. We'll talk about the narrating business and answer your questions.
Yeah, if you're curious about the ins and outs of what it means to be a voice actor who narrates audiobooks, this is for you. There's a lot of things you need to know, and these folks have the secrets.
That's East-West Audio Body Shop, our audiobook roundtable. We'll see everybody in the chat room where you can ask your questions, and we'll see everybody there.
He is the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He is a voice actor and the home studio master. Hailing from Buffalo, New York, his home studio skills and knowledge of home studio recording are unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen. And the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East-West Audio Body Shop. This episode of East-West Audio Body Shop is brought to you by Edge Studios, providers of voiceover education, production, and technology. Harlan Hogan's VoiceOver Essentials, products hand-picked for voice actors. The Home Studio Master, get a handle on your personal voiceover studio. And VoiceOver Extra, your one-stop resource for voiceover success. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his soon-to-be former penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Whitam and Dan Leonard.
Good evening, everyone on the face of God's green earth. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whitam in the West.
And together we are East-West Audio Body Shop. Well, we're down to the last three actual East-West Audio Body Shops as we know it today. Because things are going to change a whole lot in, about a month and a half. And, you know, when you move, what is the thing that you have to know how to use better than anything else?
Vacuum cleaner?
No, one of these guys. Just, you know, you gotta be able to like tack down boxes.
Did I just give away that I don't vacuum until I'm moving? Is that what just happened just then?
I think that was, yeah. Yeah, well, we know what's going to happen. Now, my wife is saying, we've got to use the steamer, but the only way we can get the steamer on the truck when we leave is to steam behind everybody as they're pulling everything out. So she can't steam all the wood floors until all the stuff is actually on the moving van.
Right.
These are the things my wife thinks about as we're trying to move here. Me, I'm just sealing up boxes left and right. And you can see they're starting to pile up over here, too. So
be careful. If one of them is moving, that means you might have wrapped Tinky up in a box. So just don't move too fast.
Or Conrad.
And if it leaks, it's the Jell-O mold.
Yes. All right. Well, why don't we get to the matter at hand tonight? We're going to talk about audiobooks, and we're going to have a nice roundtable with a fabulous roundup of guests who are experts in their field of audiobooks. They are audiobook narrators. They are publishers. They are Audio Award-winning narrators. This is a great crew of people to have on tonight. And why don't we go around the horn and introduce our guests tonight so we can get the festivities started. Yeah. Starting off from... Now, let me see if I can remember the town. Pleasanton, California. Ann Richardson, good evening, my dear. How are you?
I'm very well. Good to see you, Dan and George.
Nice to see you. Karen Cummins, where are you from now? I'm trying to remember that one.
I'm in Atlanta, Dan.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Great to be here with you both tonight.
Thank you for being with us tonight. We have a publisher with us tonight, and she's going to tell us something from the publisher's perspective when we're talking about audiobooks, and that is Carlin Craig from Post Hypnotic Press, joining us from Vancouver, British Columbia. Good evening.
Good evening. Nice to join you guys.
Thanks for joining us. Vancouver, a gorgeous city. Absolutely wonderful place to visit. Great food and a great view. Beautiful place. And joining us from Santa Monica, California, an Audi award-winning narrator.
Nominated.
And what's that?
Nominated.
Nominated. You haven't won yet?
I haven't won. I've just been a finalist.
Oh, well.
A few times.
See, next time I talk to you, you will have won.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to make that prediction. Hillary Huber, welcome back to the show. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. It's great to be here, you guys.
All right. Audiobooks. Audiobooks are, they are dominating a lot of people's lives these days, whether you're listening to them or narrating them. It's a business that has just changed radically in the last 7 to 8 years, if not probably even the last 5 years. It's changed a whole lot with the advent of a few, you know, new services and networks that are publishing audiobooks. As I like to say, since now we have these things like ACX, they want everything since Gutenberg on tape. So there's a lot of people doing this kind of stuff. But why don't we go around the horn here? Karen, why don't I start with you? How have you seen the business change since, say, you know, 2000 or so?
There's been a lot of changes, obviously, since 2000. My first book was actually in 2002, and I did work from my studio here at home. But most publishers were not allowing people to work at home then, and I had to transfer my stuff to a DAT. I had to actually buy a DAT player to transfer my tapes to send into the publisher. And being in Atlanta, if you didn't live in New York or LA or Chicago, up until the last few years, it's really been difficult to even get a foothold in audiobooks. And so that's the biggest change, is that more and more publishers are seeing the value of people working at home all over the country, but also technology has caught up to make it where it's affordable for people to get an audiobook. I mean, it's really just now becoming mainstream entertainment. It may have been our lives for a decade, but it's just now to the point where the actual public is like, oh, audiobook, I think I might like to listen to one. So it's those two changes going hand in hand, the technology changing, and but it's changing for all of us to allow more narrators out in various cities to do this wonderful work we love.
Yep. Hillary, how about you? How long have you been doing this?
I was just trying to figure that out, actually. I'm on my other computer looking up my first book, trying to figure out when I recorded it, because I can't remember. I would guess about 8 years or so. And I started recording at home too, which, like Karen said, that was odd back then. Most people went into a studio, and I used to send my tracks on a hard drive, a little mini hard drive that I would send up to the publisher, and they'd take them off and send it back to me. But the industry has the availability of home recording equipment has radically changed the industry, and what was, as I mean, I'm kind of repeating Karen, what was pretty impossible to enter is now incredibly accessible if you've got the skill and the talent and the chops and the stick-to-itiveness. But the availability is there for people to start reading books no matter where they are, and it wasn't like that in the old days.
No, absolutely not. I remember when it was all on cassette. Remember these things?
What is that?
I know. There's still a few of them. Like, the wife is like, you're taking those? You know, there's stuff on them. I don't want to lose it. Anyway, Ann Richardson, now you're fairly new to this business. You know, in the last, 4 or 5 years that you started doing this?
Seven years.
Okay.
You know, the thing that I've noticed, I guess I'm kind of echoing Karen. I'm just riding on all y'all's coattails, actually. When I got into this back in 2008, it was really hard to discover information. And I think right about that time was when information became much more accessible. I mean, I was really struggling doing Google searches and trying to find other people in the world that wanted to do what I did. And nowadays you've got shows like eWebs, you've got articles in magazines that help both sides, like Karen and I are doing this in detail column that try to help authors navigate ACX. Then ACX came out in 2011. That's the hugest game changer of all. And it's just, again, what Karen and Hillary were saying, it's much, much easier to get into this. And also, and I hope everybody realizes this, that it's much, much easier to learn how to provide good quality recording. There are so many coaches out there and so many resources that are so easy to discover that I didn't feel was quite that way back in 2008 when I started.
Okay. Carlin Craig, now you're a publisher. Tell us a little bit about Hypnotic Press and how you got started doing that.
Okay, so Post Hypnotic Press is, we're small, eclectic. I got started just because I fell in love with audio. I had been a real snob, actually, came from print publishing and discovered audiobooks when I got to a point in life where I was super busy, aging parents, young one at home, and I'd fall asleep when I tried to read. So that's how I ended up discovering audio and discovering that I loved it. And I had the same experience that Anne's talking about. That would be about 10 years ago. I started to look around to, you know, inform myself about audio, and there were no resources. I remember there was a email list, and I remember asking for a boilerplate contract, because from my point of view, I'm trying to find out how the business works. And I got angry responses saying that this was all private and how dare I ask for such a thing. And I remember writing back to that list and saying, what are you guys talking about? This is publishing. Look at print publishing and how much information is available. And the technology is driving that information and being available. If you look at the growth in the industry, it's huge, but it's still a really tiny part of print publishing. It's like 5% of the sales. And that's partly a reflection that people are still discovering them. And these new devices, our smartphones and things, are making them really much more accessible. So now it's really a matter of convincing everybody to listen to audiobooks as well as read. But it's really the new devices are the game changer, because that cassette you held up, that was an abridged book. You couldn't put a whole book on one of those. Now you can carry around a library of unabridged books of, you know, 50 books. So that's the thing that's really driving the audio industry, but it's still a very small portion of print.
Now, Post Hypnotic Press, I'm supposed to ask you, where did you come up with that name and why, and what, why is that?
Okay. I just love that name. I came up with it. I don't know. I was originally interested in self-help type books. It just spoke to me. It's sort of like there's a hypnotic element of listening to a book. I don't know. I really don't have a good reason for that name. I just love it. It's kind of invocative, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything specific. It just makes people ask questions. What is that?
Mm-hmm. Ann Richardson, you and Karen will be discussing a couple of different topics tonight, including independent publishing and special projects that you've worked on, as well as your new monthly feature on audiobooks called In Detail Magazine. Tell us a little bit more about that, ladies. Go ahead. Hey, Karen, you go first.
Well, you called on Ann.
Okay.
I'll just do the lead in and Karen can pick up halfway through. Last year I went to Las Vegas for the Romance Novel Convention as a guest of an author. She wanted me to team up with her and do a presentation on audiobooks and the importance of hiring a professional voice actor to do your audiobook and how to select one. So as I was in the hallway, I met this wonderful woman, beautiful, gorgeous woman. I thought she was a model. She's actually the editor of In Detail Magazine. And in the 30 seconds that we met, I said, I'm a narrator. And she goes, ooh, I'd love to talk to you. Maybe we could get together, write an article or something sometime. I said, that'd be great. I'll follow up with you. And it didn't happen until later, until I private messaged Karen on Facebook, I think, about one of her posts. And I'll let Karen pick it up from here.
It is funny how things happen, because I had put out some information for authors. I've made an author's resource list, because it's not just the narrators who have questions about the industry. It's authors and it's small publishers. And so I have created a list of articles that would really help them along the way. And Anne saw that, sent me the PM. And from there, it was just like an explosion in our minds. And we were like, oh, we could maybe do an article. Oh, maybe we could do a column. So we talked amongst ourselves, and Anne got in touch again with TJ McKay, who's the publisher of In Detail Magazine, which is a total online magazine, but it is gorgeous. It is It is full color. It's a beautiful publication. And the timing was right. She said she had been thinking about audiobooks for a while. They have things that help authors write better and different things that authors want to think about, but they also have a lot of reviews. And she'd been thinking about audiobooks, and so the timing was right. She said, can you give us 6 months worth of ideas? And Ann and I said, well, that's no problem. We've got about 9 months or even longer of column ideas. And it's our first issue came out in June, and our second one is coming out in July, obviously. But we're alternating. I wrote the first one, Ann's written the second one. And we're also creating an audiophile podcast so people can listen if they want to, because we want to get people used to listening. So it's just a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to help authors and publishers bring more books to audio, because that's the goal.
And what kind of things are you talking about on all these columns and podcasts and things?
Well, the first one, I gave them some facts of what the industry is like, because if you haven't been involved in it, you don't really know how many books are made or really what to expect. And my first column was that audiobooks are a multitasker's best friend. That's the beauty of audiobooks, because you can do so many other things while listening to a book. And I don't think a lot of authors have thought about that, because they themselves are not listening to books. And so just talked about it from that angle, and also what they could expect in terms of just how many were made in the industry, because as Carlin mentioned, I think that it used to only be about 5% of books, and now we're seeing more and more backlist stuff being put to audio because people are voracious and they're wanting that content. And Ann, you can take it again and talk about the July issue.
Wait, can you guys name the magazine again? What's the URL for the magazine?
It's In Detail, IND apostrophe tail, TALE. Oh. It's a romance magazine. They highlight everything for authors, as long as there's even a slender thread of romance in it. And believe me, it gets kind of spicy. It hits both spectrums. Really, really racy stuff. And then some very mild Christian romance, really clean stuff. So it hits all spectrums of romance. And so that's In Detail. Yeah, it's up in the chat room, indetail.com.
Okay.
INDTALE.com, no apostrophe.
Oh, TALE. Okay.
All right. Don't miss it.
Yeah. And then our column is called In the Ear.
What's it called?
Sorry.
In the Ear. In the Ear. Some of our column.
Oh, cute.
That's adorable.
Sorry, I was just going to have to go blue and say In Detail, T-A-I-L, has a whole different meaning.
No.
I'm sure that's been thought of.
Don't even go there.
Mm-mm. Well, depends on the level of romance, I guess. But
right. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we're off to a rip-roaring start here on East West Audio Body Shop and our audiobook roundtable with Hillary Huber, Carlin Craig, Karen Cummins, and Ann Richardson. And we'll be right back and continue this conversation in a second. But first, since we're talking about audiobooks and about recording technology, if you are doing audiobooks, or if you're just doing all sorts of voiceover, e-learning, or commercials, or documentaries, or all these different things, this incredible business that we have, where there is so many genres of material you can cover, it still comes down to your microphone and your mouth and the environment in which you work. And if you need the equipment to make sure that you sound your best, which is the way you're supposed to sound, because as I like to say, it's not about sounding great. It's making yourself sound like
you. That's my key. Cue.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
It's okay. And got a job, everybody.
All right. anyway, if you are looking for this type of stuff and you want to get the best equipment out there for doing audiobooks or all these other great things that we do, go over to voiceoveressentials.com. And our great friend Harlan Hogan runs a great website there where he has all the stuff you could possibly ever need if you do voiceover. There is stuff like books, like this one, Advanced Voiceover Career Strategies. And as he says, it's what the pros use. Or Voiceover Success, because that's in a book. You know, there's somebody who has a lot of experience has shoved everything you need into that book. Famous book here. There's Money Where Your Mouth Is.
Alan Clark.
And there are just so many great books out there. And, of course, great equipment like the MicMate Pro and the why can't I remember it? The MicPort Pro.
The MicPort Pro as well.
And as well as different microphones, along with his signature series equipment like the VO1A microphone, the signature series headphones. Here we see the Portabooth Plus, a fabulous device that is great when you're on the road. And, of course, all the other great things. The ABS, which I love to talk about, which is actually helping me out a great deal tonight, which keeps your boom hanging just right.
That's right.
And headphone hangers. Go over to voiceoveressentials.com for all of your home studio hardware and tell him that we sent you, because all you got to do is just go down to the bottom of the page that you're watching this show on right now, ewabs.com, and you will see right down there is George is showing you with a picture of Harlan in his Portabooth or talking into it. Click on there and that will take you to voiceoveressentials.com and he'll know that we sent you over there. Well, another live spot off the top of my head
in the can.
Into the microphone and into the can.
Well done.
In more ways than one. Anyway, we'll be right back with our audiobook roundtable right after this. Don't go away.
Are you confused about how to set up and maintain a professional quality voiceover studio? No wonder. The information out there is mostly mythology. This is the best microphone to use. You have to have a preamp. You need a soundproof booth. This software is the best. Your audio must be broadcast quality. Consult with someone who knows the truth. Someone who's been there, in the trenches, doing voiceover for over 30 years. Someone with unparalleled experience with voiceover studios. Who's worked with hundreds of voice actors and designed hundreds of personal studios. He knows how to teach and cares about your success. In one of the harshest environments known to voiceover, your home. Dan Leonard, the home studio master. Separate myth from fact and get a handle on your personal voiceover studio. Contact the home studio master at homevoiceoverstudio.com. Drop off a specimen of your dry audio for a free analysis.
George and Dan, EWABS. They make our lives so much easier.
Oh, crap! What's wrong now?
We're back here at East West Audio Body Shop. Our guests, Hillary Huber, Carlin Craig from Post Hypnotic Press, Karen Cummins and Ann Richardson, all people in the audiobook biz, and we're talking about audiobooks. If you have a question, throw them in the chat room, and our fabulous chat room monitor, the one and only Anthony Gettig, who I will be visiting in Kalamazoo on my way west, is monitoring the chat room, and he'll get that question to us, and we'll get it to our fabulous guest tonight. Why don't we go to Hillary, because we haven't talked to you in at least 10 minutes or so. Talk to us a little bit about what it takes to really succeed as an audiobook narrator. Did you have acting experience before, or did you just drift into it, or... What were some of your secrets?
I came from the world of commercial voiceover, which I've done for 20 plus years. But commercial voiceover requires acting, and audiobook narration requires, I think, even more acting. I mean, I would say the bulk of certainly the early successful audiobook narrators came from Broadway, came from the stage, and I think still a bulk of the narrators are theater actors. Acting is critical. It is. I'm going to say it's 10% the quality of your voice and 90% what you can do with it. There's other things too. You've got to be able to tell a story. You've got to be able to interpret a story and lead a red herring and understand the arc of where a story is going and where you can take it. So I think a love of literature is critical. You've got to be a reader. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Iron on a steam. Yeah.
What do you credit with really, really launching yourself as a successful audiobook narrator?
Stick-to-itiveness. Coming from the world of commercial voiceover and the old school world of commercial voiceover, not the pay to play where you can do it on your own. I mean, I've always had an agent who has been my gatekeeper. Any opportunity that came my way was through my agent. And I just sort of have sat back and waited for opportunities. And that doesn't apply in the audiobook world, at least not where I live. In New York, some agents cast, but my agent couldn't give a rat's ass about audiobooks. He can't be bothered. So it really takes an ability to be a self-starter and to accept rejection and persevere. You have to be able to form relationships and knock on doors and try and get the work yourself. I mean, all of the work I've gotten myself. And then work begets work. But nobody... There was no agent dragging those jobs to my door. So I think you need to understand that it requires that kind of stick-to-itiveness. And not everybody has that. I didn't think I did, frankly. And I had to work at it a lot to be a sort of self-promoter, which I'm really not very good at. So you have to be motivated.
You have to want to do it.
Yeah.
It's got to be in your blood. Got to have the fire in the belly, as they say in Jamaica. Karen, what about you? What do you find has driven your career?
In addition to everything that Hillary just said, because I'm nodding my head to everything she said, you have to practice at it before you set yourself out as someone who's a professional at it. Before I even started my voiceover business in 1999, I spent 5 years at the Georgia Radio Reading Service reading newspapers, magazines, books. That's before I ever took the first voiceover class, before I ever marketed myself as a voiceover talent. I think you have to get into practice of reading things aloud and reading a certain way. And if it's a genre of a book, understanding what's detailed there. And like Hillary says, the arc of the story. And I've had a class with Hillary and Pat Fraley. They are marvelous teachers. And she didn't pay me to say that. I say that because it's true. I've had a narration class with Paul Rubin, who's a Grammy Award-winning director. I think you have to constantly keep training, constantly keep trying to improve yourself. And you have to keep putting yourself out there. I mean, I said my first book was in 2002, and that's true. It was. But the publisher went under. The third book I did for them was a disaster. Well, it wasn't because they didn't go under because of me, but it was just a disastrous relationship in audiobooks. And I stepped away from it for a while and, you know, personal things and whatever, but I always knew this is where I wanted to be. This is the kind of career I wanted, was doing audiobooks. But I had a voiceover business 12 years part-time while working a full-time job. It does take commitment. It takes wanting it more than anything else and being willing to spend the extra time and energy and money to get equipment, to get classes, to keep practicing and keep improving yourself before you ever take that first step of marketing yourself as somebody who can actually do the job.
Mm-hmm. And what about you?
I'm shaking my head also, like Karen said. I'm getting stiff in the neck because Hillary nailed it. Karen nailed it. The way to start out, absolutely, is to make sure you've got the chops to do it and you've got the proper equipment and that you've hired, can I underline that? You've hired an engineer to make sure your sound is clean. You have to at least narrate one book just privately for yourself before you ever try and do it for someone else for money. Make sure you can do it. You know the routines of your body and your neighborhood. You shouldn't eat salad if it makes your stomach sound like a cow in heat. You shouldn't record on Thursday mornings when the garbage when the garbage truck comes around.
There you go. All right.
You have to take the steps to make sure you're turning out an excellent product. That's what I would hope the take-home message is. You know, we have a collective reputation. Do it right. Do it good. Seek the training. Seek the engineering help. Don't quit your day job until you are assured by other professionals that you're ready to do that.
Yeah, I consult folks on, you know, of course, just like Dan, setting up studios. And I get like the occasional email saying, well, this first book is only royalty share, so I can't spend too much money setting up this studio on a really tight budget. And I'm just like, man, I mean, I understand. I'm as frugal as the day is long, and I'm going to do it as inexpensively as I can. But still, this is an investment in your business. You have to be ready to make this investment. If you're not, you're not ready to launch this business. You're just kicking the tires and dabbling and playing around. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. But by the time you've gotten to the point of hiring me, and I know I'm not that cheap, I'm hoping that you're ready to make the investment in yourself and be ready to launch professionally. But that's great advice from Ann. Just do a book on your own and figure it out. And if you're not going to pay someone to help you, then you have to figure it out on your own. It takes time. Yeah.
Right. And it also may help to record one by yourself. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Record. Do the whole thing.
That's what I was saying. Sorry, yeah, that was unclear.
No, yeah, that's clear.
And let somebody else who may have an objective ear listen to it and say, okay, that was intriguing. That was, you know, that caught my attention. It got my imagination, and you got what it takes. So keep doing what you're doing and pursue it. But don't quit your day job quite yet.
Can I add something to that?
Please do.
I think that something that we always recommended in our classes was certainly for the students to stay in touch with each other. Because if you have the opportunity and you can find somebody who wants to do audiobooks like you do, I would highly suggest you direct each other's first book. Get somebody else in there with an objective ear to work with you, because the sound of one hand clapping is not an easy way for you to progress in anything that you're doing. So record that first book, but try and do it with somebody if you can. And you record theirs and they record yours. So it's not a paying deal. But you've got to get some input from other people. And I would do it, if you can, while you're recording or prior to recording, so you haven't spent 20 hours in a booth and you took a turn down the wrong road, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, Hillary just said, I think a lot of people could go on LibriVox and record something there. Mm-hmm. And as she's saying, work as a team to direct each other, because nobody's looking at what you're doing there. You can make all the mistakes you want. You're not under any sort of pressure to have the ultimate recording, and you can work out your process. When I started back into audiobooks, that's what I did. I started with a book on LibriVox because I kept hearing about punch and roll, and I wanted to learn how to do punch and roll. Well, I'm not going to learn how to do punch and roll on somebody else's time. So it's a great way to work out not only your narration skills, but to work out your technical process as well.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, I'm now getting to you before somebody else jumps in.
I agree with what everyone's saying here. One of the things that I find, you have a lot of people coming from voice background, and they've worked hard on saying things really clearly and fast, and you have to have an engagement with the text. That's one of the things I tell narrators, especially new ones, you need to be the ideal voice in a person's head when they're reading to themselves. And so you don't want to be campy or overdo it, although some books might lend themselves to that. You know, it really depends on the project. But you don't want to overdo the female voices if you're a man, or vice versa if you're a woman. You need to have some, you know, the other thing is listen. Listen to what the good people are doing. Listen to those great narrators. Just like if you're getting into any profession, if you go and look at what the top people in that profession are doing, you're going to learn a lot from them. Look at what Simon Vance does. I mean, he sounds like so natural in everything he reads, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. So I guess my big thing, what I'm looking for from a narrator, is that engagement with the text. I sometimes get things from narrators and it's all sing-songy, if you know what I mean. They're not reading the words and really in the story themselves and telling that story. Instead, they're trying, especially with nonfiction, they're like, well, I'm changing my voice. I'm varying my voice. Well, I can't understand the book. Even if it's nonfiction, you got to be able to understand the book. And that means a strong engagement with the text. Know what you're reading, understand it so that you can read it to me so that I understand it. Otherwise, you've lost me. So that's an important thing.
Yeah. How do you find your narrators? Are they coming to you? Are you looking for them? Is it you both sort of both meet in the middle?
It's a bit of both. Because I'm in Vancouver, I've got tons of friends in the entertainment industry. My background, I worked in the entertainment industry, then I worked in publishing, and then I kind of fell back into this. Well, I didn't fall back. It kind of all came together, and I really wanted to do the audiobooks because I love publishing and books, and I love actors. So I work with a lot of local talent here in my studio, but I've also, depending on the book, I might be going, well, this is a great book, and I think Simon Vance should read this. We recorded Anthony Buckridge books with Simon Vance. Anthony Buckridge was really well-known author from 1950 to 89. He published something like 26 books. So, you know, I'm looking at the title and making my decisions based on a whole host of concerns and considerations. So sometimes I'm going and saying to Gerard Doyle, read some books with us. I've had, you know, Heather Henderson. And then, like I said, I'm also working with local narrators. I'm open to narrators in their studios, but we're very small. So we're kind of, you know, moving along. We don't hire a lot of narrators. I want to get there though. I want to be like Tantor putting up 125 books a month, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah. But you're getting a lot of demos from people.
I get a lot of demos from people. I get emails. I get stuff sent in the mail. I would say save your money and send an email. Don't send CDs and stuff. But that's for me. For a bigger publisher, that's a whole different picture. You know, if you're looking at Blackstone and you're trying to get your foot in the door there, that's a different thing than with a smaller publisher like me.
Yeah. Now, Karen, you have a publishing company too, Jewel Audiobooks. How did you get that started?
I do. Thanks, Dan. In 2006, I wasn't doing any book, and I had been to Pat's and Hillary's class, and I decided I would publish myself. It took a while for this to come together, though, because there was no way for me to get a book to Audible or to Amazon. And with ACX, I now have that ability. So I'm both a narrator and a publisher on ACX. At the moment, I've only published 4 books, and 3 of them, well, they were all public domain material, but at some point in the future, I'm looking to also do some contemporary works, acquiring rights to books and publishing them, and probably me narrating them. But my favorite project, I actually hired a narrator to work with me, so I'm open to expanding that way too, but it's really to do work that I believe in, that I want to share with the world. And it just kind of is in between my work for other publishers.
It's always good to have an audiobook to have there. We can talk a little bit about technology and a number of other things, but first we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back with our guest talking about audiobooks and our audiobook roundtable here on East West Audio Body Shop. Don't go anywhere. It's going to be great because we've got a lot of your questions coming up too. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to East West Audio Body Shop.
Now back to EWAVS. Thank Dan and George's wives. For what? You have no idea.
Learning never ends.
You continue to grow.
Edge Studio has grown. Pursue multiple disciplines in tandem and grow your career. We've added new courses in a new curriculum.
We pick the best coaches from the community of working voice actors.
A new technology division, engineering and consulting, led by George Whittam.
Follow your dream.
Sign up for advanced learning or register for an introduction to voice acting or foundation studies program.
See it all now
at thenewedgestudio.com.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple. Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his health.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, Georgia set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
And he did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
And now back to the only webcast done with two cans, two geeks, and a string. East West Audio Body Shop with George Winham on his end in the West and Dan Leonard in the East.
Yeah, we got to use all these before they're all of them don't make sense anymore. So
I'm going to miss that one.
Yeah,
but we got a whole bunch of new ones from Larry and Elizabeth.
We do.
That's going to be lots of fun. Anyway, we're back here on East West Audio Body Shop with Hillary Huber, Carlin Craig from Post Hypnotic Press, Karen Cummins, and Ann Richardson. And we're talking about audiobooks. If you have a question, throw it in the chat room. Anthony Gettig will get it to us, and we'll get to it in just a couple of minutes. But I want to talk a little bit about the technology. Now, George and I talk about technology constantly on this show. And people are always asking questions. What mic should I use? What this, that. So we don't really want to get into, you know, what equipment you use so much as how you use the equipment and how you learned how to use it. And was it difficult for you and those sorts of things. So, Ann, why don't I start with you? Seeing as I've actually been in that minuscule little closet of yours in California, and how did you really learn how to do it? And when did you know that your audio was what it was supposed to be?
Well, that's a great question, Dan. Yes, you have been in my little teeny sardine can of a booth. It's very silent in here, isn't it?
It is.
It's teeny. It's also a million billion degrees in here, so I'm trying not to get too shiny.
Feel free to open a door. I mean, no matter what, you know, the dog will come in, but we won't, you know.
Yes, then I'll be covered with mastiff slobber.
Slime, yes.
Okay, so audio. That's a really important question, being as I told everybody, they need to make sure it's good. My mentor, when I first started out, said, oh, you absolutely have to have Pro Tools. State-of-the-art, basically, it's what you have to use. It's it. I bought Pro Tools and I almost went bald pulling the hair out of my head. Especially when I finally got a job from a big time publisher. They wanted the book in like 5 days. Dan, you may remember this frantic call.
Oh, yes.
I called you and said, I'm on Pro Tools and they want me to have a large diaphragm condenser mic and I have a Rode shotgun and I don't know what I'm doing and what do I do? And you so calmly said, Ann, go to Guitar Center, pick up an AT4040, go buy Twisted Wave. And believe it or not, what took me almost 2 years to learn on Pro Tools came intuitively, and it worked in less than 30 minutes on Twisted Wave. And the way I made sure I had good, I know, thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
I usually call you outside the mall, ready to go into the Apple Store, Dan. Is this going to work?
I get those calls from people, too.
I know you do, George.
Usually they're in front of the sales guy holding two products. Which one should I get?
Yes, and then when I get home, I call you, George, and say, hey, listen to this. I need a new stack. I had this absolute phobia of turning out poor audio quality. So I did what I'm telling everybody to do, and I recorded a book all by myself. First with Pro Tools, and then I recorded another one with Twisted Wave. But I hired you guys. I hired you guys to listen to my audio. And Jeff Kafer also, I sent him the audio files for the first book I recorded and said, you know, because David Wilson was interested in putting it up on Audible for royalty share. And I said, you better listen carefully because this is my first book. And there may be airplanes because I live by an airport and my dog and Jeff listened, and you guys listened, and I got the green light. Evidently, having a phobia about good audio pays off. So I got the green light, and to this day, annually, annually, I make sure that either one of you listens to the audio from my booth. You help me with my mic adjustments to make sure I've got proper mic placement, that I don't have, what did you call them, Dan? Noids? Noids in my booth?
Nodes.
Nodes.
You call them noids too if you want.
Maybe yeah, that's that. A whole new term that we're going to use now.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, it's ultimately important to me. And I'm hoping with the World Voices review of the sound in the booth that that also becomes an annual process for voice actors and WOVO members. Because really, a lot of the stuff you hear on Audible or ACX, I'll just stop there.
Okay, that works. Hillary, now you, as you said, you came out of the voiceover business and into audiobooks. So, did you have a little bit of experience in doing this stuff yourself originally?
No, none whatsoever. And I'm still kind of when it comes to all that equipment behind me. I was really stupidly fortunate in that the first company who I ever recorded for, which was Blackstone, they an engineer came to LA and set up my Pro Tools and everything for me, set up all my sound stuff. They sent me a computer with Pro Tools on it, and they made me, I'm like a moron. They made me a whole template, and all I had to do was open it up, and it had all sort of settings and things. So I had to learn Pro Tools, which like Anne said, I need a helmet. It's heinous. But I found that it's heinous because if you talk to 10 different people about how to do one thing in Pro Tools, you will get 10 different answers. And so I asked around a lot of how do you do this? How do you do that? Till I sort of found the way that worked for me, because some people want to use their short keys, some people don't. Till I sort of knew enough to record. I don't ever edit. So I could. I'm not that much of an idiot, but I punch and roll. I pretty much just record. But so they set up my basic template and stuff, but George has come over and helped me with sound issues. He has certainly fielded panicked calls when I get those messages.
Error messages. Error 6085.
Oh my God. It's insanity making. I've been on a good run. I'm going to find some wood to knock on, and I haven't had an issue lately, but when I started for doing punch and roll recording, it was the only game in town, and now there are other options, so I think that's terrific, but it's what I have right now, and until it breaks or my version becomes obsolete, that's what I'm using. But I'm not technically savvy. I really rely on the people around me to help me. Small things make me panic. So I keep a lot of phone calls at the ready, and unfortunately, George just gave me his again. Look out.
Yes. As George and I like to preach, though, never panic. There's no reason to ever panic about anything.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's just a machine, and it's usually just a mouse click or, you know, a major power failure or an asteroid hitting or something like that. It's nothing serious.
Yeah, exactly. I know, like Karen, I watch things Karen talks about on Facebook, and she's so savvy. And I'm so not. So I just have to rely on people who know more than I do. And there are plenty of them out there.
Good to rely on your network. Mm-hmm. Karen, what about you? Now, you're obviously, you know, Hillary thinks you're techno savvy. So tell us how you learned all the technical stuff for audiobooks.
Well, even the voiceover and audiobooks are my second career. I mean, they're my second career, but they're my first love. That first career was 25 years spent in information technology positions, and I have a master's in computer information systems. Wow. So technology is my friend.
There you go.
And so my first...
I just read in the chat room that computers are evil, right when you said that, which cracks me up.
No, not at all. I mean, I had to fix servers and roll out stuff for a whole office or a whole region of offices. So to me, learning, my first software was Cool Edit, and I had an Akai DPS 16. This was back in 2001. I have always had a home studio, I had a home studio before other people even thought about it, I guess. But I researched, and so that's the equipment that I got at the time. And I was recording in my closet upstairs, which was very hot. It was an accord with accordion doors, so it was very narrow and didn't have that great of a sound, but that's what I started with. Then I moved to the closet across the hall. And then we built this room, and we got a book on soundproofing techniques, and we told the contractor exactly how to build this room. And I love my room, by the way, my studio. But I was using CoolEdit on a PC, and a lot of things like copy and paste, I mean, I've been doing this. Researching error messages, I'd been doing this on my day job. So all of that is just second nature to me. But in 2007, I had an engineer come out, and he advised me to go to a Mac and use Pro Tools. And Pro Tools, yes, has a learning curve. There were things that I could do in CoolEdit that I couldn't figure out how to do in Pro Tools. There are some things that CoolEdit had back then that I think Pro Tools still doesn't have, like spectral display.
Yeah.
But it was just transferring the skill that I already had with one software to something else. And he gave me, you know, he went through some stuff and I took notes. I mean, this is what I did on my job every day. This is, you know, how I had to learn stuff. So a lot of it was trial and terror and looking up messages. Google is your friend. You, if you have an error message, just copy the whole thing into Google. And I guarantee you somebody else has had that problem. But you may have to go through several forum messages and extrapolate the answer to actually figure out how to solve your problem. But I also took a Pro Tools class at the Art Institute of Atlanta. And even though the teacher was primarily concerned with people in a music program, a lot, you know, Pro Tools functions are Pro Tools. So if there's an opportunity to take a class locally, I certainly recommend people do it. And even now, I mean, I still learn things. I mean, I'm teaching myself the shortcut keys. There's still things that I don't know, but I think I want to know. So when I have some spare time, that's what I do, is start learning another feature in the software, because it's always going to come in handy later.
Yeah. Well, we always like to say, try and keep it simple. And Pro Tools was not really designed for doing audiobooks. It was designed for making music, as was almost all the equipment that we use, microphones and that sort of thing. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I also wanted to mention, and this is another unpaid testimonial. When I got my first book on ACX, I called up George and I said, this is what they're telling me it needs to sound like. And George listened to what I had, created me a Pro Tools stack. I'm still using that Pro Tools stack. It's set it and forget it. So that part is taken out of my consideration. I'm more concerned. And I do edit my work sometimes. I have edited whole books before. I don't do that now if I can avoid it. If, you know, I'll do a shorter one. But when I first started, I had six takes of something. I had all the mistakes there. It was so painful and time consuming to go through all that and edit. I don't know how anybody cannot do punch and roll. Yes, Dan, I'm talking to you. But no, I mean, I say that with you know, a smile and a joke, because whatever works for you, it's what works. We've got to get the system and process that works for each of us. And for me, punch and roll works because I can get a much cleaner performance to start with, and the editing job is much faster. And I'm all about speeding up my process any way I can to produce the best book in the least amount of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Carlin, now, when you're listening to people's audio, and as a publisher, that's got to be, it must drive you nuts with some of the stuff that you hear. And what is it that you're looking for that a lot of people are not doing out there?
Well, we're recording our own books too, right? So we have similar technical concerns. We're listening to the noise floor. We're listening to, you know, the mic and the computer sounds. If you're sitting there recording with the computer in the same room, that, you know, then you have to heavily gate it. I don't like heavily gated audio myself, but I know that some people get away with that. I want to say that Pro Tools is great, I suppose, but I've never used it. We actually use something called Reaper, which is wonderful, much less expensive, much more intuitive, I found, to learn. And you can do a punch and roll with Reaper, but you can also just sort of edit on the fly, which is maybe, you know, for audiobooks, actually adequate. And what I mean by that is when you're looking at your Reaper, you can just put your cursor where you want to pick up again and start reading rather than the punch and roll where you're hearing yourself and then you're coming in. It's a very slight difference, but it's very easy to use. So when I'm listening, though, I want to hear a clean sound that's not too heavily processed. In fact, we normally ask people if we're working with somebody out of their booth that we want to hear it unprocessed first. We want to hear what the raw booth sounds like because we're going to be processing it after the fact. We're using RX, Isotope RX, and mostly that, or I use Nectar a lot. I like that simple program. And that's, I guess, the main thing is the overall staticky, you know, extra sounds that you get in there that are the sound from the booth, the computer, the mic. We want to hear that raw sound and make sure that it's fairly clean to begin with.
Right. And a lot of people have, when they first start out in audiobooks, and I've worked with a lot of new narrators, and they're doing it from something that sounds like Grand Central Station, that, you know, the acoustics.
You want a nice dead sound.
Yes, a nice
dead sound. It's got to be a nice dead sound.
Absolutely.
Now, I know a fellow, Sanjay Singhal, has just bought a company called audiobooks.com here in Canada, and he's developed something called Recordio, which he's still working on. Now, he's saying that this is a program he's designing for authors to be able to record their own book very simply, and it's really interesting technology. And he's actually saying that they're getting a fairly decent sound with an iPhone on a towel in a room. And managing to get it. And it's really interesting what they're doing. So it'll be interesting. I know, but I've heard some of the samples. To me, if you're listening on earbuds or whatever, it's actually sounding okay. As soon as you put on a decent set of headphones, you can hear the gated quality. You can hear certain things that, you know.
Level later.
This is still new. Yeah. This is still just starting. And so it's interesting where that's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, doing punch and roll. The thing that seemed and this is, again, coming from the perspective of an engineer, not a narrator, but it would seem to me that having to wear headphones all day while doing punch and roll recording would be really annoying. So I found that Reaper solved that problem because now you can have speakers playing back the pre-roll. And then as soon as it engages record, the speakers cut off.
Yeah,
I mean, that I think is brilliant. You can't do that with Pro
Tools. I don't narrate, but I know the narrators.
You can't do that with Pro Tools. You still can't do that with Pro Tools. You have to have headphones on with Pro Tools, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Hillary, do you wear headphones all day?
I wear one. I don't wear the other.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, sometimes I just hang them on the hook.
Yeah.
And I hear the pre-roll.
You just hear it just well enough.
Oh yeah, I mean, just well enough.
Use it like use like a stage monitor, just a really, really quiet stage monitor.
Just really quiet, yeah. And it doesn't seem to create a problem.
And that's the thing about Reaper, that you could do that if you want that punch and roll, but you can also just line it up and then just start recording over top of what you've just had. And when you're narrating, you don't really need punch and roll. It's not like you're looping in TV or film. You don't have to, you're not matching your lips with some set of lips. You're just doing another take.
Right.
So I don't know. When I look at Pro Tools, I think it's like getting a Ferrari to go get a milk from the corner store. We basically use a binary system. So we ask people to do the one clap to begin with. When the first time they make that error and they're starting to correct, it's one clap. And then every time they repeat, because you know how you might have to do a sentence five or six times before you get it right, do two claps. And then the next new correction, it's one clap. So the editor can look and see one clap and then the last two claps, that's all the stuff that's going to be erased. And it just makes it much easier to kind of find your way through the audio. So one, two each time until you go on to the next correction.
That's
really
great.
Simple and it works well.
Yeah. I teach people a similar technique based on what I think some stuff Dan taught me. Using clickers and just to be able to do your first edit pass visually and not have to listen to the entire chapter on your first edit pass dramatically speeds up the process because some people will listen to every syllable. The other problem that happens when you do that is then you start micro or over analyzing every dang thing you just read. And you want to reread everything.
Which is the best take? Well, that take is a little bit better on this word, and you get yourself all balled up over nothing, really.
Yeah.
Right. And it's always been my opinion that, you know, it's, you know, if you're using roll and punch, which is what it actually is, that you might actually lose a take that perhaps might have been better than another one. Because once you go back and roll over it, it's gone forever. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I like using Flickr.
It's not gone forever, but it's hard to go find it again. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also like to do the old... That one works really well. You know, and then do the 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. And then really you just go visually right through it. Anyway, we have a slew of questions from our voluminous audience in the chat room. And we'll start off here with Steve Williams. He says, I've done over 10 audiobooks through ACX, but they're mostly royalty share deals that don't pay much. How does one break into consideration for the better paying PFH deals or get consideration for royalty share deals of books that are likely to be well promoted and that will sell a pile of books? Carlin, I think we ought to throw that one at you first.
Well, I mean, I think that that's like any acting. You got to go after it, as other narrators have talked about here. It's persistence. It's getting your name out there. Go to APAC, spend the money, and go and meet people in person, shake hands, and keep trying. I mean, you know, how do people get into acting? How do people get into any of these careers where you really have a lot of competition? And then that's the other thing is that even the to get into that part of the publishing where there's real money, I'm still struggling to do that as a publisher. You know, publishing is not an industry where everybody makes a ton of money. There are the big publishers and they have a lock on certain things. It's, you know, it's not where you're going to get rich quick. So if you're in audiobook narrating to get rich quick, you're probably in the wrong industry. You might want to consider Wall Street.
My mother said, couldn't you be a doctor?
Yeah.
Hillary? So, yeah.
What?
You. Yes. Answer the question. Yes, your turn.
Click.
Oh, it was answered so succinctly. You like I said earlier, you've got to just keep at it. I would caution you to make sure that when you are putting your foot forward, that you're putting your best foot forward. Because if you aren't ready and you manage to get a book from a big publisher and you don't do a very good job, you're probably never going to get another opportunity with that publisher. So don't rush it. Take your time, and just have all your ducks in a row when you do go knocking on doors. But going to APAC is an excellent suggestion because that's where everybody is and you'll get to meet them all. Don't be too pushy. Just be a nice person and try and be friendly and don't throw a bunch of crap at these producers because they're pretty well armored now. You know, they get assaulted at that conference. And introduce yourself and then get in contact later and send your things later. They don't want to carry home a bunch of demos either. So attend any industry functions you can. I know most of them are the cocktail parties and stuff are in LA and New York, but it's just getting to know the people who's who in the zoo. What I love about the audiobook world is it is peppered with really, really nice people. Unlike I think a lot of other areas of acting, I don't feel that sort of horrible competitiveness. I feel that everybody is really gracious and kind and willing to share what they know and teach. And I find that to be very special. It's really kind people. It's not a bunch of snooty celebrities.
It is.
It's very different.
I want to jump in because I had the same experience when I came into publishing because I came from the entertainment world and then I ended up falling really into print publishing for years. And print publishers, senior people in the business taught me my business. And when I asked them, why are you spending all this time doing it? It was because if you love books, they wanted to help you. And I think that audiobooks, when I first discovered it 10 years ago, was still more part of the entertainment industry there were fewer books recorded. They were the big books that would get recorded. And what you're saying, Hillary, is really true. Over that time, I've seen it get friendlier. I've seen it get more like the publishing industry, which is more collegial, more supportive, because we love the books.
That's exactly right. And we love what we do, and we feel fortunate. And so we want to share that for the most part.
Absolutely. Larry Hudson asks, unless you want to try taking a shot at that one, George. Where is George anyway?
All right. As usual, I'm multitasking like crazy. So,
okay.
Sorry about that. The question comes from Larry.
Oh, Larry. Okay.
Is that the one you wanted me to ask, or Shelley?
No, I want you to figure out what it was that Shelley was asking.
Oh, I'm in the process of coming up with a pseudonym, she says. That one?
That one, yes. Okay. I got lost somewhere along
for
the line.
For a certain type of audiobook.
I've
done lots of others, but wondered if there was a system to coming up with one, and how do you deal with giving out contact details and such, like what the F, not following her there. Oh, that's what Dan said. Maybe it should be a different color font. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But,
anyway.
Yeah, no, that is not the question.
I don't think there's a system, but I mean, I saw Hillary's hand come up. Hillary?
I have a great story.
Go for it.
Story time.
I use my two grandmother's middle names, which isn't the great story. The great story is I met a girl whose pseudonym is the name of the girl who used to pick on her in high school.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
How great is that?
Freaking brilliant.
That's an excellent suggestion for picking.
Yeah.
Right?
I have a little tidbit on that.
Go for it.
You know, I saw in the chat room, and I'd actually heard it before, you should use the formula of your pet, your first pet's name.
Right.
And the street where you
go. Well, that's your porn name, right? That's your porn name.
Yeah. Well, and also your pseudonym.
Yeah.
But let me just connect some dots for the listeners here. When you have a pseudonym, who are you hiding from? Your parents? Maybe? Wouldn't they know the name of your first doggone pet and the street you grew up on?
Are they listening to that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
And if they are, high five, man. That's
hey,
all I gotta say.
Right.
I got to go to Facebook and delete a bunch of stuff. Oh, shoot.
Okay, well, now we know what Shelley was talking about. So, yes, in that case, which case, my name would be Skipper Irving.
We're going to search now.
Skipper Irving, that's a great one.
Skipper Irving, I'll have to remember that. Steve Williams asks, where does one go to find audiobook deals after one has some experience on ACX? How do you go about trying to find, you know, better places to do audiobooks? And how do you get in with some of the better publishers?
You know, I think the thing about the ACX and doing all these royalty shares, and I don't know, I mean, I'm probably making a mistake even talking about this, but one of the things in terms of growing this industry is having the books more widely available. And if everything's done through the ACX and they have exclusive distribution, it slows down growth of the industry. And I don't know if Audible is really realizing that. Audible's now Amazon, and they kind of have, you know, a bit of a stranglehold there. But this, you know, we need to grow the industry first. And, you know, those better books are out there, but there's not a lot of them. It's when you're starting to get into that area, it's a competitive market.
It is. And, you know, and we were talking earlier that there are maybe a handful of people, you know, of whom I all know their first name, who are really making some major dineros doing audiobooks. But it's a small cadre of people that are doing it, and we have a lot of people trying to get in. You know, they discover voiceover, but they all launch themselves into audiobooks, and they're finding a lot of frustration there. And people need to perhaps understand that there's a lot of opportunity in other areas. But Karen, what advice would you give to people if they, you know, if they're trying to get into audiobooks? Would you tend to suggest to them this isn't the only thing there is?
I would say that the people who are on top of the mountain didn't fall there. And if you think of an overnight success, people who are thought of as overnight successes usually have been working their ass off for 10 years or more. It's like anything else, you have to get rid of this expectation for instant gratification and work on becoming better. Because once you become better, people will seek you out. I mean, that's where I think it is. And I actually think that it's kind of like, I gave this example off the air, but I think it's important to note. I look at audiobooks like baseball. In baseball, there's a major league team. There are three levels of minor league teams. Before you ever got to that first single A team in the minors, you've been playing baseball all your life. You were playing as a kid. You were playing in high school. You were playing in college. At the first instance of being a professional, you're not at the same level as the people who have been in the professional ranks for years, still improving and still getting better. So as you progress up, you know, in baseball, you go single A, double A, triple A, then you hit the major leagues. And I don't think there's a magic number as to when that happens. I think you just have to keep improving your skills every day and just get better. And as far as looking for publishers, I know Julie Williams just did a webinar on working with big publishers that you might be able to still purchase a copy of that. But there's a magazine called Audiophile Magazine that publishers advertise in that. Look in Audiophile, see what people are doing, listen to books. I mean, I can't believe how many people want to narrate books and have never listened to the first one. I listen to an audiobook every single day. I'm always listening. I always am listening to people who are better than me. I'm listening to people who are just starting. I'm listening to it all because that helps inform me and helps me get better. But you can look in Audiophile Magazine and see where publishers are. You can join APAC and get member information that way. But like Hillary said, you've got to be ready to know that you're at that level, that when you market yourself to these people, you're ready to do the work fast, get it back to them as error-free as possible, and in their timeline.
And quality,
exactly. I mean, and that's only an assessment that, you know, I don't think anybody can make that assessment for you as to when are you ready to actually take that step.
Mm-hmm. Well, Larry Hudson, sir, has a follow-up to this. It's like, why do so many love doing the audiobooks when they're, for the most part, so little money in it? He understands the idea of wanting to do it because you like the content with nonfiction. And if you act, it keeps your character chops up if you're an actor, but not the grind. He doesn't get it. He says, please educate me. What is it about audiobooks that is just so enthralling to people? You know, I suppose if you're making a lot of money, that's just fine. But there's got to be a clear enjoyment to it. Hillary, what do you think?
Having come from the land of the commercial, I did that for about 10 years before I started doing audiobooks. And I made the I don't want to say I made the transition because I still do commercials. But my main reason for it was doing commercials is great. It pays super well. It's not a huge commitment time-wise, but my God, is it vapid. I don't give a crap if I do another 7-Eleven commercial. I mean, of course I want to because I make good money doing it, but I didn't feel like I was leaving anything beautiful behind on the earth and having any sort of creative fulfillment doing a 30-second commercial. But give me a big, beautiful, juicy book to sink my teeth into and it fulfills the need for leaving something behind that's beautiful. As a performer, it allows me to be a panoply of characters. It allows me to tell a story, the oldest art form there is. I'm an only child, so it allows me to be by myself, and I kind of like that. But conversely, I've got to do books I don't like also. And so that's where the challenge comes, is when you're narrating something that you really don't care about. And you have to find what there is to care about because somebody took the time to write that book. And I like to think there's really no bad, horrible, terrible book out there. I'm always at least trying to find some kind of beauty in it. But I think that like what pretty much every panelist has said already is you've got to read a book first and see if it's for you. It is not for everybody. It is a brutal, brutal load of work. And there are some of us who love it, and there are many of people who think they're going to love it, and they're just not. And, you know, that's what the world is all about, right?
Well, yeah, making a smooth segue, maybe. There's another question about the amount of work. Devox says for the ladies, for a 10-hour audiobook, how much time would you suggest to budget for pre-reading, research, recording, editing, retakes, preparing the files, or mastering? I mean, you know, obviously there's not all of you are doing all of those steps. And I would hope that you get to a level where you don't have to do all those steps. What is your ratios? You know, what is your ratio like for a per finished hour? 3-1, 4-1? Starting with you, Hillary.
Well, mine is 2-1 or 1¾-1 for actual recording.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have to read the book first and do research first.
Okay, let's add that in because that's real production. That's pre-production, right. But it's part of the time.
I don't know how long it takes me to read, but what? I don't even know. What's average?
Well, we're just talking about per finished hour. You know.
Okay, I know, but I can't do the math on that. So I have to read it first. So what's that, 10 hours, 5 hours to read a 10-hour book maybe? Okay. Mm-hmm. So are you doing the math?
No, I'm just thinking in terms of yes, I am. 2.5-1.
George can do it in his head.
2.5-1. Right.
So, it's funny. I try not to factor in that pre-work too much because it makes my finished hour rate go down so much.
Yeah. Not thinking like a business person, no.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think of that as the pleasure of sitting in my bed reading a book.
Yeah. And thinking I'm allowed to do this. I'm allowed to sit here and read a book right now.
And I can sit here and read a book. That's pretty terrific.
That is pretty terrific. How about you, Anne?
Depends on the book. That nonfiction pharmaceutical history book is going to take 6-1. 1 hour of finished audio has taken at least 6 hours from the pre-read to the research to the, you know, editing and take after take to say phenolphthalein or whatever.
Yeah.
but the nonfiction, you know, the nice little clean stories or whatever that you pre-read and develop character voices for easily takes me between 2 and 3 hours per finished hour.
So the fiction actually takes less time than the nonfiction in many cases.
I can't say that because you've got those freaky sci-fi books that have all kinds of aliens and their own languages and I don't speak Klingon. So, like a normal, like a romance, there's not a lot of name research to do in romance.
Right.
But you know, it depends on the text, but if you just average everything across the board, I'm kind of with Hillary between around 2 to 3 hours per finished hour.
And you're not mastering your own books.
I do, thanks to your stacks, but you know, gratefully this year I've developed my business plan. I work smarter instead of harder, and now I'm farming out my editing and mastering. So it's 50-50. If it's a royalty share book, I'll edit and master myself.
Right.
And you know, just hope it all works out.
Awesome.
All right. Randy has a question. Randy K has a great question here. Panel, do you care about reviews on Audible?
Okay.
And then she has a follow-up question for that. Who wants to tackle that one first?
That's a loaded question.
Be honest, they're not listening.
Well, as a publisher, I'm looking at those reviews, and I'm just using the ones that are good, and I ignore the ones that are bad, and I vote them down. I say, no, that wasn't helpful.
Thank you. For narrators everywhere, thank you.
Yeah,
I pay attention to the reviews in audiophile. But the review or Publishers Weekly. But I think that a lot of people who write reviews on something like Audible or, you know, Amazon, they either love the book and that's what makes them write the review, or they hated the book. And it's not necessarily a impartial reviewer. So I like to caution people not to read those reviews. They will oftentimes they'll confuse a bad book with a bad performance. It's hard for a lot of people to separate that out. I just I like to hear that a publisher doesn't pay much attention to those, because I think a lot of them are damaging. Every now and then somebody will start a thread on Facebook, here's the worst review I ever got. And you see just hilarious lines of sometimes some really scathing, hurtful things that people write. And I think that people need to take those reviews really with a grain of salt.
Well,
as a performer.
Yeah. Just to add to what you're saying, Hillary, I think all the one-star reviews, people are much more likely to leave a one-star review than a five-star review. That's just how our society is. So the vast majority of the people, if they even leave a star, are 3, 4, and 5. They thought the book was fine, they liked it, or they really loved it. But it's only the haters who will always trash the book, because it's like they have to justify that they spent the time with this and warn other people, don't get caught up with this book. So there's kind of a psychology there. If you understand that's what's going on, it's less hurtful. But they're really, you just have to look at those things, Audible, Amazon, iTunes, any of those reviews. That's just one listener's opinion. Mm-hmm. And you can't please all the people all the time, nor should you try, because if you start taking in what one person said, you're going to change your performance, and maybe you didn't really need to. I mean, if there's some sort of trend there, sure, that maybe is something you need to look at. But if it's just random one-star drive-by reviews and, oh, they hated it and that's the worst narrator I ever heard, what do they know? Like Hillary said, there are legitimate reviewers. There are many bloggers now who are avid listeners who write very detailed reviews, not only of the storyline, but also of the performance. And it's those sorts of things, the bloggers and certainly Audiophile Magazine, which is the industry Bible. Those are the ones, and Publishers Weeklies, those are the ones that you really want to pay attention to.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go around one more time. Everybody has any last thoughts on their careers or any good advice for the budding narrators out there and those who are experienced and still like to hear from a lot of the experts? You get one last shot here. Let's start with Karen. Go ahead.
The thing I would probably advise people is I see a lot of questions about marketing as well. And I've put together a cheat sheet. It's on my Twitter profile. If you go to my profile, you can click on it. And I've just gathered a lot of articles and tactics that you can market your book. But I will tell you, I love marketing. I do market my books. Please believe me when I tell you, your best use of time as a narrator is to narrate more books and just get better. I think marketing really should fall to the publisher and the author. But if on a royalty share book, especially, many narrators have, you know, we have skin in the game and we want to market it. So if you're interested in marketing, I advise you to check out my cheat sheet and see if any of these tactics can help you. There's a link to how to get a review in Audiophile Magazine and tactics that will really help you toward that end. And that, you know, that can help publishers as well.
Yeah. And where can they find that?
You can find it. I've got it linked on my Twitter profile. The actual URL for it is j.mp/commons audiobook marketing. And so it's capital C, capital A, capital N. So it's jump/commons audiobook marketing with capital C-A-M, sorry.
Okay. Right. Well, it'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. Anne?
I guess my only 2 cents is to don't do it half baked. You know, take the time to do your homework and take the time to take pride in your product. Your name is on this audiobook. And just think, if you want to apply to Penguin Random House and they start looking for you on Audible and they pull up your very first royalty share book, holy cow, that better be a good one. Do your homework. There are no shortcuts. And if you're struggling, just know that your struggle is going to make you better. And take your advice from people who are qualified to give it. Facebook is wonderful. But if you're a new beginner and you have a doubt about your sound, about your recording chain, or how the sound from your studio is, don't put it up on Facebook because you're going to get, you have no guarantees who's responding to you. Wouldn't you rather take advice from someone who's been around the block a few times? Take the time to search out reliable coaching and reliable engineers and to do top-notch work. Care about your product.
Yeah, there's no shortcuts, but there definitely are long cuts. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Carlin?
Well, I agree with what's been said. As for marketing, I want to address that because marketing is really, really hard right now for everybody. And even if you look at the big publishers, they expect authors to be out there. With audiobooks, if the narrators can help with that, and we're not expecting you to do it all, it is very helpful. If a narrator's involved, interested in marketing, doesn't just drop the book, they've done it and they never mention it again, that feels like a little bit of a slap. So getting a little bit involved in the marketing is not a bad idea, but more to the point, it is developing your chops. Having a good studio set up is important. Also being a good reader and an actor, that's important too. That's what I'm listening for. You could have the cleanest sound in the world, but if I don't like your voice and I don't think you're engaged with the text, I still don't want to hire you.
Good point. Audi-nominated narrator Hillary Huber, you get to bad cleanup.
I love batting cleanup. It's the hardest. I said that I like to go last, though, didn't I? But everybody's already said such brilliant things. I think the best advice I could give is you are never done learning. I've done several hundred audiobooks, and I'm not done learning. I, like Karen, I am an avid listener, and I listen for what I like, and I listen for the things I don't like, and I'm always trying to grow. I go to conferences, and I listen to my peers give presentations, and I read Audiophile magazine, and there is never a time when you get to sit back on your laurels, I don't think, and say, this is it, I'm done, this is what I do. I think we always, if you are always willing to grow and learn, and just keep your ears open and listen, you will always get better and more opportunities will be presented to you. So you're never done learning.
Outstanding. Well, ladies, this has been most informative and entertaining. And the people that need to know this information, they got what they needed to hear when they came tonight. So Hillary Huber, Carlin Craig, Karen Cummins, and Richardson, always a pleasure to see all of you. And thanks for being on our show tonight.
Thanks, fellas.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, gals.
All right.
Thank you, ladies.
Yeah.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you. It's so good to see all your faces.
Wonderful. Okay. It makes it a lot more fun, doesn't it? All right. Well, George and I will be mopping up the mess in just a minute. And we also have a new mug man. So stay tuned right here on East West Audio Body Shop. We'll be right back. VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
Hey guys, this is Tom, also known as the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, and you want to fill your ear holes and your eye holes with Dan and George and the East West Audio Body Shop. Ah! Meow. Snails like it too.
You're watching East West Audio Body Shop with Dan Leonard in the East and George Whittam in the West. They're nice guys, but every time I'm there, they never let me make water. So I'm going to go make water right now. I'm a grown man.
Have you noticed that bugs are really bad this year? I don't know. Maybe not in California. It's
not so
dry.
Bad here.
Yeah, but the skeeters here in Buffalo just awful. It's raining a lot. Anyway, well, we've only got two actual East-West Audio Body Shop episodes left, so that'll take us up to 194 and 195, and we're going to have to call it a day with those and move on to the next rodeo.
Just sit back and relax. It's time for some announcements.
All right. All right, let's get into it here. Let's see. What's coming up next week? Next week, we have
Animation Roundtable with Scott Burns, John Taylor, and Jamie Hunsdale. And maybe MJ Leilello. We're waiting to get a confirmation from MJ.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. We're doing a lot of roundtables the last couple of weeks because we want to get as much information out there as possible.
Roundtable roundup.
Right, and after doing 193 episodes, we're tired of talking. Let everybody.
What are you going to be called now?
We're going to call ourselves the Voiceover Body Shop because we're actually going to be in my garage. So that'll
be. And we're going to have a green screen. It's going to be body shop themed. And right. our acronym is VOBS, which of course is quite, you know,
apropos.
So
yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. So join us next week for that. That'll be a lot of fun. And then on July 6th, we're going to be talking a little bit about Source Elements and Source Connect with Robert Marshall. And we're also going to have a fan roundtable. So we want all of you out there that are watching the show. We've asked you before. Listen carefully because we keep seeing this in Facebook the next day. What is it you want us to do?
Just send in a shout out. Short and sweet. Maybe less than 5 seconds, and we'll slap it together into a super cut of all of you guys saying, hi, it's so-and-so in Bumbleflam, Pennsylvania, and we'll slap it all together. You send it to us. Send it to ewabshop@gmail.com. In one form or another, we'll make it happen. And if you want to be on the roundtable, that's the way to do it.
Right. And here's how you do it. You get out your iPhone or smartphone and put on the video and look into it, see your face and go, hi, this is so-and-so. Well, I love East-West Audio Body Shop. Good luck. And we'll see you at the fan roundtable. And then just send it to us. Not that hard.
That's it. That's all you got to do.
It ain't rocket science, kiddos. All righty. So that's going to be the absolute last EWAB show for about a month. And then we'll return with VoiceOver Body Shop in August. Thanks, of course, to our donors of the week, the amazing Eric Aragoni, who I can't wait to meet when I get to California.
Yeah, the other donations include, we got a bunch more that came in even in the last few minutes.
So
we got Jeffrey Scott Chambers. We got, who else do we have here? I didn't put them in the show notes. Brian Page, my dad. Thanks, Dad. Amanda Fellows.
Thanks, dude.
It's so great. Eric Aragoni, who never, ever misses a show. Thomas Pinto. Thank you, man. Shelley Avellino. Stewart, I can't Uncle believe Roy. How many people who actually support the show by working for the show still donate money to the show. My gosh. Maureen
Vogel.
They want
to keep it going so they can keep volunteering.
Yeah. Bill Russell. Thank you, guys.
Great guy. Great guy. Narrator.com. How appropriate tonight.
Yeah. Narratorhelper.com, actually. Hey,
is that what I said?
Yeah, close enough.
Okay.
If you're plunging into audiobooks or you're doing a lot and you just want to offload some of the work, maybe you're getting busy now and you don't need to be doing the mastering and the proofing, then narratorhelper.com will help you through that book efficiently, time effectively, and accurately. And it's a great service. It's put together by Amy Golan. I trained her on audiobook production and mastering, so hopefully she's going to do a good job for you. So narratorhelper.com is for you.
All righty. And, you know, you can also look at the show logs if you missed any of the amazing information that these fine ladies sent out tonight on eWebs. And you can find that right above my head there. If you look on the page, it says show logs. Mm-hmm. Click on that. Jack DeGaulle has done a great job of compilating all that stuff. We're also on YouTube. So if you don't have your EWABs fixed on Monday nights for a month in July, just go to YouTube and watch all 194 episodes.
In a row.
In a row.
That's right.
And binge watch.
There's a logical,
get a Chromecast. If you don't know what it is, Google it. Get a Chromecast. Plug it into your TV. Sit back on the sofa and watch them all.
Right. And when your TV blows out from watching two or three of those, you can listen to the podcast version on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and ewabs.podbean.com.
That's right.
And all right. We have to thank our sponsors because this wouldn't happen without them. Harlan Hogan, VoiceOver Extra, and your fine employers, Edge Studio, helping us provide uninterrupted live stream and bandwidth so you can watch this all over the world in real time. And, of course, thanking the people who really matter, our wives. Marcy, you're fabulous. How she puts up with this, I never know. Kathy Curran, our fabulous producer. Anthony Gettig, with a stellar job in the chat room tonight. And Shelley Avellino, when he's not there. Jack DeGoli for the show notes. Tim McKean and Lee Penny for being Lee Penny. That's going to do it for us tonight. Next week, stuff on animation. And speaking of animation, we've got a new Mugman tonight, and you've got to watch it. More hilarity and fun from what happens when you just do animation over and over and over and over again from the time you're 5 years old. Well, that's how the kid's going to have a career. What can I say? Anyway, I'm Dan Leonard, still in the East for a couple of weeks.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we're still East-West Audio Body Shop. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next Monday night.
Cheers.
Aloha.
Entirely in pennies.
She held up the line?
It took 3 hours, Mugman. She had like $90 worth of pennies.
I want to try carrying 3 gold bars to buy a bicycle.
Where do you even get gold bars?
Well, my Uncle Piper was a miner, and he picked a peck of pickled gold ore and gave it to me because he was arrested for soft thievery. It was pretty intense.
Hold that thought.
Why not use the bridge?
Leaping's more exciting. Gets the heart going.
Pimenta, you go first.
It just reminds me of this one time. My cousin, Harold, he's a salt shaker. He tried to jump over
this
river.
Just go already.
But he... Okay.
What are you?
A pepper shaker.
Tiana, what if I drown?
You know, you can always take the bridge if you want to jump across.
Hey, Mugman, you suck! Hey, ladies, check this out.
Yeah, the bridge was a good idea.
Shouldn't we call the Coast Guard?
No.